Welcome to our DC Diversity Dive, a podcast in which our diversity and inclusion team aims to recognize and support cultural practices and celebrations. By recognizing and supporting these occasions, which are an important part of many people's lives and well-being, we help to enable an inclusive and diverse environment in which everyone can thrive regardless of their race, culture, or background. In today's episode, we look at Movember. But what is Movember? Movember is an annual event that takes place during the month of November, where men around the world grow moustaches to raise awareness and funds for men's mental health issues, particularly prostate cancer, testicular cancer, mental health, and suicide prevention. Movember has become a powerful force for raising awareness not only about specific health issues, but also about the importance of early detection and seeking help. The campaign emphasizes that talking about these issues openly can reduce stigma and save lives. Today, we'll look to discuss some of the more difficult topics and how to embody our value of Be Courageous with our guest speakers, Mark Aldous, Chief Operating Officer, Mike Robertson, Head of UK Consulting, and Stuart Boyd, Global Head of Sales and Marketing at Delta Capita. So the first question is, what's the significance of Movember and what does this mean to you? Stuart, do you have any thoughts on this?
For me, Movember is an opportunity to signal a happier and healthier world. So I think the idea of growing a mo suggests that we want a happier and healthier world. Globally, Movember remembers that I think it's about 60 men are lost to suicide every hour. So the idea of having that symbol that we want a happier, healthier world is really important. So ultimately, it comes back to awareness, unity, education, and communication.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree more. It's fantastic that a stigma can be removed.
I guess Movember, I first became aware of it probably through rugby, because England always play rugby matches in November. And I started probably about 10 years ago going to games and noticing an increasing number of moustaches. And eventually I found out about Movember and what was being promoted there. And that, for me, it feels like a very positive approach to raising awareness of men's health issues generally. And the moustache component of that is clearly it's fun, but it's noticeable. It's something that you spot and a positive fun thing. So that's really the significance that for me.
So I came aware of it in a very similar fashion in terms of exposure to kind of sporting events, etc. Initially scared off by the concept of probably my innate ability to grow any facial hair. So I was probably scared off more from that perspective. But I think the more you understand about the root causes of what it's trying to achieve in terms of a more open and honest community amongst males to talk about things which impact all of us in some way or another, I think is a hugely important and worthwhile cause. And if there's anything that we as an organization or individuals can do to shine a spotlight on such an important topic, then I think it's something that we should all take the opportunity to do so and encourage others to do likewise.
Absolutely. And I suppose next question that probably leads on to is, can any of you share any personal stories, experiences related to mental health, which should inspire involvement in Movember?
So I think the topic of men's health, and in particular mental health, is certainly something that I individually am very passionate about. There's a few reasons. I'll be candid in that I'm certainly someone who has struggled and very much continues to struggle with my own mental health. And that's something that's plagued my whole kind of working career. But it's something that I remain very focused on trying to understand kind of triggers and causes and coping mechanisms, which I require in order to kind of manage this. But I think, you know, conversely, the topic of men's health is something that I've seen firsthand in terms of the impact of potentially this sort of stubborn male pride getting in the way of seeking the right professional help. So whether it's an age and stage thing, but, you know, certainly at the moment, I have a number of extended family members who have experienced or are continuing to go through treatment for things like prostate cancer. And certainly my own father sadly passed away a few years ago, and his plight, I suppose, highlighted the importance for me of being able to be accepting of help when needed. You know, he very much fitted the mold of being a kind of a slightly gruff and stubborn Scotsman who very much refused to seek medical support and didn't feel that it was the right thing to do. And he had this kind of perceived phobia of anything that looked and felt like medical intervention. And he very much delayed the signs and the symptoms which were showing, and ultimately led to a diagnosis with bowel cancer. And I think that the very nature of bowel cancer created a very debilitating toll on his life, physically and mentally. And whilst an earlier diagnosis wouldn't have necessarily changed the outlook and ultimately wasn't the reason that he passed away, what it does do is it creates a huge amount of fear and confusion for the patient, but also it creates a huge amount of worry and suffering for the broader impacted family and community around those individuals.
Well, thanks so much for sharing that. Like, it's important to remember that whilst people going through whether mental health or cancer, it's a struggle, but also for wider circles of relations as well, it's equally difficult.
I mean, for me, November has highlighted the need for men to talk about things they don't like talking about. And men don't like talking about headaches, let alone having their prostate examined. But for me, it's something I started doing annually 3 years ago. And whilst it's not something I particularly look forward to, I think it's really, really important. My only guidance is that you can choose between a female or male nurse, so choose carefully. But it's important to get it done regularly.
When it comes to men's physical health, I mean, I've also reached an age where prostate checks are definitely important. And I think the fact that people are willing to talk about that and talk about their experiences from that is really a positive thing. I think a few years ago that was something that people just wouldn't be willing to do. So, but I worked with a couple of people who've been through testicular cancer and fully recovered, but very importantly, they were checking, and in response to a concern, they then followed up and went to see a doctor, got the treatment they needed, and made a full recovery. I've seen that. I saw that at a reasonably early age in my career, actually, that how important it is to not only check your health, but also the willingness to go and talk to someone about it, talk to medical professionals and have treatment, and the positive impact of doing that. So for men's physical health, I think that willingness and that openness that the Movember aims to promote is so crucial. And when it comes to mental health, I guess it seems very similar to me, that just the willingness to be open and honest about having feelings and vulnerabilities can itself help deal and tackle with those. But Movember definitely plays a great role for me in allowing people to be comfortable to raise their own experiences, and then hopefully encourage people to seek help when they need it.
Thank you for that, everybody. And so I suppose we've spoken predominantly about the amazing work Movember does for cancer and how it helps anyone affected by that. But increasingly, Movember's focused on mental health issues. And I just want to get your thoughts on A, why this is important, and B, what programs and or resources are available to overcome any challenges anyone might be facing.
Part of Movember is essentially about having a good time with goal. So it really is about trying to be positive and trying to share in a happy, healthy community. And that's not always possible, and that can be very difficult. And I've struggled with it in the past myself, but over time I've kind of come to learn about ways in which I can make my environment more fun and more happier. And things like meditation, things like spending time with family, walking, running, exercising are all things that allow me to have a happier, healthy time. And I think Movember does a really nice job of reminding us that those things are fundamental and essential to our mental health. So I will, as much as I can, try and enjoy those things during November.
That sounds like a great idea. I mean, one of Movember's big movements is getting people to do 60 kilometers throughout the month. Sounds like you'll be leading from the front in that one.
It's clearly a complex, complicated world that particularly younger men have to navigate these days. I've got teenage boys, and I see some of the challenges and struggles that they go through, and the complications around what the expectations on them are. So can be difficult for men to show those signs of weakness, and can certainly lead people to feel alone and avoid seeking help. I think that what Movember is about is helping people recognize that they're not alone, that these issues are issues that people like them face, and that talking about them and raising them in a fun, constructive way, in the way that Movember operates, is a really important thing.
And Mike, do you have any knowledge of resources or any views on the importance of mental health?
Everyone suffers from their own mental health challenges, and it can take multiple different forms. And ultimately, whether it's feelings of just being low or anxious or fearing of something, each of these represent different mental health challenges, which likely many males will go through. And there's a pathway to support. Obviously, there is speaking to your GP around the actual chemical imbalance that ultimately the mental health is triggered by. But there are alternatives, you know, and I think as Stuart touched on, there's many different alternatives. And a lot of them are just encouraged by openness and ability to speak, whether that's through formal sort of face-to-face therapy, whether that is through exertion of some sort of physical activity or just social activity. You know, each of those things are recognizing the need to provide an outlook or an outlet to channel that sort of self-development within. Likewise, you know, for me, the biggest thing is around peer support. So whether that's friendship groups, colleagues, the ability to seek and access that support from the communities that we all have around us can play a critical role in addition to the actual more kind of formal medicinal support which is out there.
There's definitely something to be said for checking in little and often with close members of your support network, which definitely can't be understated as well. Do you have any advice for men who maybe hesitate to seek help?
I think it's fair to say that, you know, there's still too many men which, you know, kind of almost feel emasculated by sort of medical intervention or are worried by this stigma that comes with showing a perceived weakness, you know, whether that be a physical or mental health challenge. But the issue, right, is internalizing those stigmas. Yeah, that's a problem because internalizing a stigma, that can often lead to some sort of negative impact on your self-esteem, your self-image, your personal relationships. And we need to find a way past that concept of feeling like illness is a weakness and in some way equaling some sort of damaged or diminished level of masculinity. As we've said, there's no silver bullet to fix that. But ultimately for me, it just starts with two things, right? It's greater awareness and it's encouraging open dialogue. So we need to provide more information to impacted people, to impacted patients. And, you know, and as a society and as an organization, we need to encourage openness and honesty around treatment options, management of side effects, helping people understand complications. And all of that is really aimed at trying to help set and manage expectations to the impacted individuals as to what can ultimately be a kind of a scary unknown entity to try and deal with.
Thank you so much for that. Mark, are you able to share any views on this?
Yeah, I mean, giving advice, it feels difficult for me because I've been fortunate not to personally have to deal with too many challenges from a health side. So I always feel reticent trying to give advice on things that I haven't experienced myself. The main thing I think, and Mike talked about this, is that when people talk to me about their challenges, when people open up and explain or share their concerns, I see that not as a vulnerability or a weakness, but as a strength. People who are willing to share their thoughts, so how they feel, how that they've been affected by challenges, are seen as showing strength, as being role models for improving men's health overall. And so my advice would be that don't be afraid to share those vulnerabilities, because that's not how people see it. That's not how people respond to it.
That's really interesting how you said that you've never faced any particularly major mental health challenges. And I was wondering if you had any other mechanisms that you found particularly helpful for keeping yourself mentally more positive.
I don't think there's a single right or wrong answer. Mm. Everyone sort of has their own paths. And exercise and running has been part of the process that I use. But I think what I try to do is separate different parts of my life and where I can avoid bringing the burdens of one part into the other. When I leave the office, I try to leave the challenges of work behind. When I go home and focus on home life, I enjoy watching and playing sport, which allows you to shut out all of the other sort of challenges from work or home. So I try to draw boundaries between the different things I do and then focus on the area I'm in, I think has been effective for me. And I try to reinforce those boundaries, mentally, but even physically. I enjoy working from the office because the journey between home and the office is a physical boundary as well as a mental one. But listen, there are people who I think find the exact opposite effective, going home from a day's work and sharing some of the challenges with your partner or with friends. For some people, it is exactly the right answer. So it's very much a personal perspective and very, very much a trial and error, I think.
Well, it's definitely not one size fits all. Definitely finding an outlet and compartmentalizing is definitely an effective way of avoiding any overspill from stressful areas into all parts of life. So
I agree with what Mark said about there not being a kind of golden bullet for self-care. I think it comes down to the individual. So what works for me may not work for other people, but I'm very happy to share my perspective. Is there's two things really. One is that if you think about a trifle has many different layers, and I see self-care as layers. So for me, there's layers such as meditation, being in nature, swimming, running, being with my family. I make sure that I have a spoonful of all of those every single day. So it's not just one thing. It's making sure I do a little bit of everything each day. To me, is really important. And what those things are, it depends on the individual. It could be knitting. It could be anything, right? It's whatever helps that individual. So there is no golden bullet. But the other thing that's really important, particularly with things like anxiety and depression, is to be disciplined about it. Because if you stop doing it for a week, 2 weeks, and suddenly you'll find that these things creep back into your day. So I do think it's important to take the time to find out what self-care works for you, but also to be disciplined to make sure you keep at it. Because all too quickly, we get consumed with the fast pace of life, and we can get dragged back into difficult times.
So I suppose next question would be, how do societal expectations and traditional gender roles affect men's willingness to discuss and seek help for health issues? And have you found that throughout your lifetime that you've seen this changing in any noticeable way?
I think there is still probably an all too common approach within men, right, to use humour or avoidance instead of tackling issues head on. You know, there can be concerns around feeling the need to protect others around you from the impact of any sort of diagnosis that you might need to seek. But likewise, there might be cultural or religious expectations around keeping such matters private. But I think, when it comes to the sort of gender roles, right, I think it's a lazy and an inaccurate statement, or to say flippant comments like, women are just better at dealing with this stuff. I mean, that's just not the case, right? But ultimately, men just don't talk. I think it's improving, and initiatives like Movember are a great way of shining a light on the importance of doing that. But we all play a role in terms of encouraging that openness and honesty. So, we need women, whether it's mothers, sisters, girlfriends, wives, to encourage the men in their lives to speak. And we also need men to speak to men, right? So whether it's fathers, sons, brothers, friends, colleagues, we ultimately need to use that community around us and ultimately strive to take strength from the support, which, if we look for it, is inevitably there.
Certainly, I've noticed over time, I've got four brothers and I'm the eldest, but we do speak more openly about our own mental health. And certainly when I look at my son, who's six, he's much more aware of his own mental health than I was at a young age. And I certainly see it more in school. So I do think things are changing as we go through different ages. But the one thing I come back to is that Movember is all about, part of it is about creating a moment where you bring people together in a safe environment where people can be vulnerable and can share. And I think we should ensure that we can make the most of that in November, but also try and bake that into what we do every month and make sure that we are sharing with our friends, our families, our colleagues. Because it's absolutely crucial that people feel that they can be heard and be listened to. So to me, creating a moment in November will be very important.
The societal expectations of traditional gender roles, there isn't one set of those. We're talking from London today, but there are very different expectations and different challenges in different countries, in different cultures. That's the starting point. I think in there is like Movember have really focused initially on cultures like Australia, New Zealand, UK, Europe, US, and enabling conversation in the sporting arena and now much more broadly. But there are different cultures with different expectations, and I think it's important that this message is a message that can transcend all of that. I do see a shift in societal expectations around the role that men play. I think certainly in the UK you see, I guess, men with traditionally positions of strength and sportsmen, athletes, rugby players, members of the royal family, who are opening up their own stories and showing their own vulnerabilities. And I think that is helping to shift the story and show that even in roles that traditionally would have been seen as male strength roles, even those people who have given that aura have their own vulnerabilities and are now willing to share them.
And so the next question is, so I suppose we already have touched on this, but Mike, I was wondering if you could give some thoughts on some effective self-care and coping strategies that the men can incorporate into their daily lives to promote mental well-being. And it doesn't have to be anything major, but anything that you've found yourself or have heard from others.
There's no one-size-fits-all response, and there's no singular problem that everyone is trying to address. And so everyone needs to find a coping strategy that is commensurate with them in terms of their abilities and their interests. So yes, for me, physical self-care is key, and investing in whether it's diet or exercise, that can have the ability to improve confidence, help you reduce stress, but also just focus on trying to get sleep, which is often the most important thing. But I think there's also a kind of an emotional self-care element, right? And that's ultimately what we're talking around in terms of this ability to talk, to be able to share and to open up. And people might not want to do that physically. You know, it can be as simplistic as writing a journal or focusing on a hobby or an interest that you can gain traction with and passionate about, because that allows you to channel your emotional focus into something that you seek enjoyment and satisfaction from. We talk around a lot around this kind of concept of kind of spiritual self-care, right? So whether that's yoga or meditation, I think those are aspects which are proven to allow you to focus on yourself. But equally, just walking in the outside world, kind of focusing on the arts, music, sport, whatever it might be. I think there's an element, certainly in the world that we live in at the moment as well, where financial self-care is a thing as well, right? So we're all acutely aware of the financial strains that the world is under at the moment and what that means to each of us. And sometimes, you know, seeking support and advice, or even just being able to stay on top of things in terms of your spending habits, your financial goals, feeling in control of those things can help put a mind at ease, ultimately, in some instances, and address a worry that potentially is there for all of us, given the current climate. And then I think, you know, the societal aspects is this ability just to flourish and focus on developing positive social relationships, whether that's with work colleagues that you're fortunate enough to have a strong friendship connection with, whether it's friends and family outside of work, making sure that you can kind of spend time and energy on actual activities within those communities, you know, really does help some sort of maintain your own sort of social identity and keep you connected within each of those things. And I think any of those elements are important and are things which we could all be practicing in a way that works for us, but also not being scared to seek out the final self-care element, right, which is the sort of more professional help. And that is something which we should all be looking for. So whether that's leaning on the resources which Delta Capita can provide you as an employee, or whether that's looking or seeking more medicinal support from a GP or a specialist, they're there for a reason. And if it's something that you feel like you need to lean on, then it's important that you feel comfortable and able to do that and factor that into your sort of daily routine as well to provide the balance that you need.
It's interesting how the three of you have mentioned about the activities that help you to de-stress and protect your mental health have been largely non-digital activities. I was wondering if any of you are able to talk about how you found the increased kind of access to information and having devices always available, whether you found that has been beneficial to your mental health and that you can find out information and it could ease anxiety, or whether you found that an excess of information has in fact had more negative impact.
So I actually find kind of digital world we live in a bit harmful for my mental health. So I am very conscious of taking time away from devices. I'm someone who struggled with anxiety historically. You have these constant thoughts in your mind about things that could go wrong. And I think having access to information can exasperate that. So for me, what I've done, and I've done it for my kids, whether they despise it, is I've bought a digital safe. It's a transparent digital box with a lock on the top, and devices go in there at 6 p.m. in the evening. So, you know, I force myself to have a 5-hour break from my phone every day. To me, that's really important because you can get to a point where you have too many thoughts in your mind, and then that can spiral and grow. So to me, it's really important to take a detox away from devices where possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose always having this information available can definitely be detrimental. That's a really cool idea of the digital detox. We're never actually kind of bored anymore, quote unquote. So we can't let our mind wander because we always have kind of instant gratification.
I recognize, as Stuart described, that having constant access to digitally to information, particularly around work, when I described earlier my separation between the different parts of my life, there's a hole through those barriers, which is the ability to read emails at any time. So I think what Stuart described, I definitely recognize it's important to control and manage when you look at messages, when you look at emails. And it's about recognizing, for me, what the impact of those will be. If I know that an email is going to trigger a response from me, if I'm going to feel emotional about it, if I'm going to want to respond to that, and I'm not in a work environment, I'm at home, I'm in a family environment, I will deliberately not read that email. Even though I'm very tempted to know what the response will be, I will prevent myself from opening it because I know then I will be distracted back into thinking about work, thinking about the response, feeling potentially emotional about that response. And that will be detrimental to the environment I'm in where I'm trying to relax and enjoy myself. I think that the principle of using that access to information carefully and cautiously is crucial.
Thank you so much, everybody. And the final question from me is that at DC, we're very lucky to have a very proactive DEI committee, and our wellness team in particular are fantastic. And I was wondering if any of you had any thoughts on how workplaces can create a more supportive environment for the mental health of male employees or indeed employees in general.
Yeah, it's important for managers in particular to think about how their teams or staff feel as well as how they're performing. And I think as part of that, asking how people feel, providing the space and the opportunity for people to open and raise concerns or challenges about how they're feeling or their mental health is important. So I think that's something that we do at Delta Capita, but we could do more of. I think it's also important to recognize that for some people, they may not want to share those things. They may have the other mechanisms and other forums where that's their preferred route of dealing and managing with their own challenges. So I think creating the space, creating the environment for openness and being willing to discuss and support people, but giving them the space and the opportunity to decide themselves whether that's something they want to use or not. I think those are the crucial things for me.
What one of the prevalent themes to that whole podcast has been that there is no silver bullet.
I think Mark kind of hit the nail on the head, right? I think we can't expect every single person to move at the same pace, and we can't expect everyone to feel able and open to share as much as the next person. And so the emphasis has to be on creating an open and accepting community and providing opportunities for people to talk or to achieve the support that they need. And now that could just be from providing communities, sporting opportunities, social opportunities. That's an important aspect because ultimately we're all thrown together in the workplace and we want to make the most of it, both from a relationship building perspective and a career development perspective. But also it's important for people who are in management positions to understand that everyone is coming to the office with their own agendas and their own behind the scenes challenges. And we need to be cognizant of that, aware of that, and focus on that sort of relationship building set of activities which enable people to feel more confident to be able to speak and be able to speak around, you know, whatever it is that they want to and whatever issues that they seek support on.
Yeah, I think the answers from Mike and Mark have been really thorough. But I do think there's also a level of individual agency in terms of how we create that culture in DC. And I think one thing that I do and encourage my team to do is a thing called a check-in Tuesday. So just go and check in on someone. Anyone in the firm, doesn't matter, you know, how senior, how junior, you're not checking up, not checking on, you're just checking in to see if they're okay and how they're doing. I think people really value just someone saying, how are you today? You know, having a quick 5-minute conversation. So I think just there are little steps we can all take. And if we all take those little steps, it will help kind of foster a more supportive and understanding culture.
Absolutely. What? So could you just define the difference between check up and check on and check in a bit more?
It's not checking up on their work product or checking on their level of performance or how they're doing. It's just checking in on how they're feeling, how they're doing. So it's not a work-related question. It's more of a personally, how are you doing? So I'm not checking up on them. I'm not checking on. I'm checking in with them to see how they're doing. So very much a non-work and very much a more how are you doing today type question.
That sounds like an amazing idea that anyone can do regardless of rank or position either. So it definitely one well worth considering. And to close out, I'd like to do some rapid fire questions for everybody, if that's okay. So firstly, DC is lucky to have some great values that define what it means to work here and to be an employee of Delta Capita. I was wondering, Stuart, what the value of be courageous means to you?
Yeah, this one's quite a personal one to me because when you've struggled with mental health, it can be really hard to be courageous, you know, because there are points where, you know, just brushing your teeth or getting to work takes courage. And I think for me, that's the key point here is that courageous means many different things to many different people in all the offices around the world. And it comes in different shapes and sizes. And it's just in whatever way you can try and be courageous in your day, because we're all going through different experiences and we have different challenges to face. But the idea that we're encouraged and we're given the agency to be courageous is really important. So for me, it's something I'm very proud of.
Mike, what would you say the best and worst pieces of career advice you've ever received or in fact given, if we won't say it as playing your own trumpet?
I'm going to hold off on whether I've given it. I would say in terms of what I've received, I think early in my career in the city, I attended a training session around conduct at work. The strapline of the training session was this concept that we all must leave it at the door. So however bad you're feeling, your boss, your colleague, your client doesn't need to see it. Now clearly, right, if you're hungover or tired or you just don't like the weather that day, that's one thing. And also we can all be guilty of maybe expressing those things in a sort of a negative whinge or moan or a non-constructive way. But this concept of leaving it at the door and not being able to talk, I just found wrong, right? You know, we all want to bring our best selves to every occasion, whether that's work or social occasions or family. But we all have times where things are all consuming. And it's so important that we can be open and honest with those that we work with. Ultimately, as I said before, we're all thrown together in the workplace and it can be hard to develop those relationships on any deeper level. but having the opportunity and an environment where we can be open and communicative is a key way of trying to build that connection and seek that support. Best piece of career advice, again, a previous colleague used to insist and say in most meetings that this concept around having access to people with much more knowledge than you is a blessing, right? And it's not a threat. We all have our own skills. We all have our own capabilities. We all have our own approach to work. And all of that is unique to us. And it's so important that we find a way that we have the confidence to each play to our own strengths. You know, we're all on a path of learning and development. And so creating an open and collaborative environment where we can bounce ideas and have conversations and collaborate with others, whatever grade they may be, is critical to that aspect of kind of continuous learning and improvement for all of us.
Perfect. Yeah, that's some great piece of advice. A wrap on our DC podcast featuring Movember. And I just want to say a huge thank you to Mark, Mike and Stuart for taking the time out of your, I imagine, rather hectic schedules to be with us and discuss these difficult topics that are associated with Movember and general mental health and well-being. These conversations are vital to how we can prioritise our well-being as colleagues and managers whilst in the workplace and both in office and at home. Thank you for listening to this discussion, and please look out for more content from Delta Capita on our website at deltacapita.com, our LinkedIn page, and lastly, our Instagram at delta.capita.